Hey, how are you? So without further ado, let us begin. I'll just get that my second open. Okay, so I think I did a good job of explaining in terms of Kenyan Kasef and why, why it has so many applications and uses, and why is it that it's superior, right, to Mashiach. So I think we did a good job last year of really showing how the fact that Kinyan Kesef and the transfer of Moth is an interaction between the two human parties, as opposed to between the person who's buying the object and the object that's being purchased, is really, let's say, Kinyan Kesef superpower, right? It's an interaction between two human parties. And therefore, let's say by karka it works, by metalton it works, right? And potentially the fact that, why is it something that works by kiddushin, right? How can, why take kinyan kesef and apply it to kiddushin? And I think our answer is that because it's something that really focuses on the human parties involved, right? It really allows it to bridge a lot of gaps, and really just focus in on anything that involves two people, right? It has the potential to be something where we might expect to see Kinyan Kesef. All right, so that's that definitely is very significant difference between Kinyan Kesef and, let's say, other Kinyanim. And what we want to see is, okay, we said, all right, why Kinyan Kesef, right? Because Kinyan Kesef is about the interaction between two people. Once we know that, now we go on to know, okay, well, what is the nature of the interaction between those two people, right? We know that Kinyan Kesef focuses on the interaction between the people, but what is that interaction? What are they doing? And what is the Kesef, and what is its role? And then finally, we're going to say, like, okay, once we figure that out, we can go back to Kiddushin and try to really figure out why Kesef can affect Kiddushin. Okay. What do we have? So the Mishnah in the very beginning of Kiddushin just has like a sort of repetition where it says, okay, you can use an actual coin of a pruta, or you can give an object or objects or commodities and the value thereof. Okay. Now, Tosfos, is wonders why is it that why are we saying Shava Kesef in addition to Kesef? We have just said Shava Kesef. And then our question is also, well, who says, right? Who says that you can use Shava Kesef? If I say that you could give legal tender, does that mean that you could give commodities? Right? Who says that works? And who says that you can replace legal tender with commodities of equal value? Okay, so on the first question is going to be, what basis is Shava Kesef Kekesef? How does that work, right? And obviously we can give a few different ideas, but why should that work? Number two is, however it works, how obvious is it, right? How universally applicable is it? How often can we say, oh, yeah, Kesef, Shava Kesef, they're interchangeable. You need a source. What would that source be? And what might that tell us? And what's the scope of Shava Kesef, right? Does it work always everywhere? Does it, is it limited sometimes? And in Kiddushin in particular, are there any differences between Shava Kesef Kekesef in general and Shava Kesef Kekesef by Kiddushin? Okay. So, it's what do you guys think in terms of like the conversion from Shava Kesef to Kesef? How obvious is that? You could also just say it's not obvious at all, but they should,
I feel like it depends on the object.
Okay,
Like
why?
if it's something whose value is debatable, then it doesn't feel Shava Kesef, but I guess that isn't Shava Kesef.
No, it's like
I'm
it's
not sure
definitely
about
worth
that.
something, right? Something worth more than a pruta, but its actual precise value is, sort of unclear.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's
fair. Legit. That's a legit point, right? When something is very clearly, I don't know, let's say you have a brand new iPhone, right? In the box. So with, you know, with the plastic on and everything. So when you have a brand new iPhone, you know, its actual value, its market value is very, very clear. You know exactly how much you can get for it, you know, and you know exactly how to do that. Like, perhaps that's different, Rachel's suggesting, than, you know, I don't know, you have like a nice rock that you picked up and like, wow, this is a really pretty rock, you know. I wonder how much it's worth. I wonder if it's like, you know, I don't know, jade or something, or it's not. It's just like a very nice rock, you know. So if you go to the right person and someone who likes nice rocks, maybe it's worth more or maybe it's worth less, or might definitely worth Bishav Pruta because it's a really nice rock, but its actual value is very up in there, right? Those could very potentially be different. Hey, why exactly? How exactly would you want to, could you try to like give a formal difference between those two cases? You can say it in different ways. I'm just curious which one is like,
you know. One is a commodity and one is a, I don't know, one's like, I guess you make maybe the differentiation thing with things that have a set value and things that have, you know, an indeterminate value. Like, you know, you give me a piece of gold and we all know that gold is, you know, worth, you know, let's say $100 an ounce. And that's universal. But then, you know, as you said, like the nice rock, that's gonna be different between different people. And same thing with the iPhone. The iPhone is, it's clear that when you buy an iPhone from the store, it costs, you know, $1,000. But, you know, different things. But for something that's not clear from the store, then it's perhaps something different.
Okay, right. So Zach's saying, okay, the clarity of its value and the ease of its conversion, right? If it's easy, right? Something like a piece of gold. So I know exactly how much it's worth and I know exactly how to get that, right? The iPhone, you know, if it's brand new, I know how to go on eBay and sell it. If it's a nice rock, then I have to, it's worth something, but I need to know who, you know, who's a rock collector or, you know, things like that. Okay. Very good. Right. That's definitely, I think, a very legitimate differentiation is the ease of extracting its value, right? If I have a piece of gold, so it's very easy to extract its value. I know exactly how to do it. I know exactly, you know, how much it's worth, right? If I have the nice rock, I don't necessarily know how much it's worth and how to get that value out of it. Okay, that's definitely good. What else?
I think that before you get there, you kind of need to take a step back. And I was thinking about like the machloket we saw last time between the Sma and the Taz, about whether Kinyan Kesef is about paying off value, whether it's about a symbolic interaction. Because if it's about a symbolic interaction, there might be something unique about the Kesef itself. But if it's about paying off value, then Kesef and Shvei Kesef wouldn't really seem to matter because they're both items of value.
Very good. Very, very good. Right? If we care primarily about something symbolic, then maybe we'd care about it being coinage, right? Maybe having some sort of like, if it's about a legal symbolic interaction, we might require a more legal symbolic form of currency, right? If it's more about providing compensatory exchange value, then, right, then maybe it should, you know, then we'd be more inclined to shove a kesef kikesef, right? I think even within that, in both of those, right, our, you know, let's say Zach and Rachel's example is still relevant, because if something's, you know, exchange value is very, very clear, like the piece of gold, right? So maybe we can convert that, you know, into formal value, right? How much is gold worth? Gold is worth X amount per, you know, per troy ounce. And if that's true, then maybe we could say, okay, we have X number of troy ounces. That means, right, we have, you know, X amount of dollars here, right? So Tehillah is saying, well, wait a second. If you need something that's formal, then maybe you really need formal currency. Right, it's possible that we can argue that if something is easily converted, right, into formal currency, then we can potentially treat it as such. Right, although that's already, right, that's a bigger jump. Right, if we want exchange value, so Tehillah is saying, okay, then we shouldn't really care so as much about, you know, about whether or not it's kesef or shava kesef. But potentially, if something's exchange value is more, you know, opaque, let's say the pretty rock. So then maybe I can argue, you know, that, well, I might have technically, like, you might really be able to get the amount of money out of it, but is that really a fair exchange value? if I give you the pretty rock, which, you know, which is not so clear exactly how much it's worth and where you can, how you can extract that. Let's say I only owe you a pruta and I give you a pretty rock that's definitely worth more than a pruta, right? But still, the fact that it's not easily converted into exchange value.
You might want change, and then the question of how much it's worth comes into play.
Right.
Like, exactly. You might say, I'm giving you exactly a pruta worth of this rock, and you have to give me back the remaining money, but then you run into the problem of, okay, how much money more did I give you than a pruta?
Right. So that's, I think, an important issue. There's another way you can formulate Rachel's question, or Rachel's distinction, which is, what about commodities, not necessarily as, you know, things of value, but as a currency, right? When Zach talks about, it was talking about gold. So if you slightly change the formulation, you know, one thing is about how easy and simple it is to convert. The other question is, right, gold, right, can it be a currency as a commodity? Why? Because the gold itself, right, has a very clear value. And because it has a clear, consistent value, you can use it as a currency, right? Not because it's got a stamp on it that says what it is, what value it has, right? But because we all know how valuable it is and how to get that value out of it. So it becomes a sort of a commodity currency. In coinage or in currencies, right, there are representative currencies where, you know, this banknote represents X amount of gold in a vault somewhere. You have fiat currencies, which is, you know, this coin is valuable because the government says it is, right? It's legal tender. And you have commodity currencies where, let's say, the real point is that it's X amount of gold, right, that I'm handing you, right? And some government entity has weighed it so that we know how much gold it is, but ultimately its value is the fact that of the commodity of the gold that it is. So in theory, right, we can take a step back and say, if I give you X amount of gold, right, even if it doesn't have the number on it, that's, you know, that's a commodity that can function as a currency, right? So one thing is about, it has value and money is value, right? Tilo is going in the direction of saying, look, if I'm trying to get value, then maybe I can just treat things of value as value, right? Kin and Kesef is about getting value. This object has value, right? Same thing. I could say I'm converting. Really, this is not coinage, but I can convert it into coinage, and therefore, well, you know, we can do the conversion, right? And Rachel is saying, okay, in that case, though, maybe we'd have to care about its exact, you know, the ease of conversion, right? And whether the other person knows how to do that. And then Zach's moving it towards gold, right, brought up the possibility of it being almost like it is a coin, or you could treat it as a coin. You can make it into a currency. You could say, it's the equivalent of a currency, right, if it's a clear commodity. Yeah, Tila, you were going to ask something.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, is there a havamina that there's something symbolic specifically about Kesef, and so Shavei Kesef would just never work?
Yeah, there's definitely first of all, there are things where you can only use Kesef. There are things in Halacha where you can only use Kesef and not Shavei Kesef. Pidyon Ma'aser Sheni, you can only be poda onto Kesef. You can't even use, let's say you have the piece of gold that used to say, like, you know, one gold shekel, right? One gold dinar, and it got rubbed off, right? Or it got misstamped, so it doesn't have the stamp on it, but it's literally the piece of gold, right? So the Gemara says that those don't work. And the Gemara, the Pasuk, it's based on Gzeras HaKasav, that Ma'aser Sheni needs to be nifte onto legal tender. It's not good enough to be, even if it's literally the piece of gold, right? That, you know, that just, it's missing the stamp, it doesn't work. Because Ma'aser Sheni dafka needs legal tender. So there are definitely things that need legal tender as a legal force, as a legal construct, in order to work, right? I think our question is a little bit, you know, sort of in general, let's say Pidyon Ma'aser Sheni, can you be poda with Shavei Kesef? But right, then the question becomes, okay, well, if Ma'aser Sheni dafka needs Kesef, right? There clearly is a distinction between like actual legal tender and things that are not, right? So when it comes to Kenyan kesef, or things that are generally bought or dealt with kesef, how significant is the legal tender part of it, right? Okay, so I think, you know, I think we hit all the spars that I've thought of, with, which is, and one option is to say they're the same thing. We just care about value, right? And kasef is shava kasef, and coinage is really just a way of making it simpler and getting loose change. Zach brought this up, and I think this is also an important point, is how much is money in general really just a way to get change, right? You know, it's hard to get change out of a nice rock or even a hunk of gold. So we invented coinage in order to simplify the process and to make getting change a lot easier. But, it's sort of like when we try to break things down into math, it's not, on one hand, it makes things much more manageable, like economics. Economics is really like, I don't know, each person wakes up in the morning and decides he wants to go buy a falafel. He doesn't want to buy a falafel, right? What we try to do, we can't really deal with that. How do you model that? How do you, predict for the future about, how many people are going to vote this way or how many people are going to buy falafels? So we do is we try to put that into math, right? X number of people on average, are going to want falafels. In this, type of week, people generally do this or that or the other thing. And by turning into numbers, it just makes it more manageable. So kesef and shava kesef are the same thing. It's all just about value, right? And worth. And kesef is just a really great way of doing that, right? Or we could say that, no, shava kesef is kesef. It's currency, right? You can convert things, right, objects into money. Right? And then the question might be, well, how easily can you convert this object into money? Maybe that really matters, right? Or how direct is that conversion? Let's say it's easy to convert, but it's not fundamentally just an object, right? And then finally, obviously, it's also the possibility that, no, they're really two separate things. There's kesef, there's shava kesef, and I don't need to convert it, right? I don't need to even equate it. I can just say, well, just like, kesef does it, and shava kesef does it. And even though they're different things, and shava kesef is different, but potentially, right, that's still fine. Maybe shava kesef does the job, right?
Can you have the third shita without a limud, like a pasuk?
What do you mean?
Like, how would you be able to prove that shava kesef is effective in its own right, having nothing to do with kesef, unless you had, like, your own limud?
Well, I can say, if I think that what I really care about in some things is value, and in other things, I think is what matters is currency, right? I would probably need. You're right. Would you need a limud? I think you're right. Yes. Sorry. I think you would need a limud for that. Correct. So I misunderstood your question, and yes, that's a very, very good point. Step back. Ratil is asking. For number one and two, right, for kesef and shava kesef are the same thing. They're both value. Or I can say that shava kesef is converted into kesef, is converted into legal tender. I don't necessarily need a pasuk, right? Because I'm ultimately saying that they accomplish the same thing and they are the same thing, right? They can be exactly the same thing. They can be similar to the same things. But at the end of the day, they're both kesef. On the third one, what I'm really saying is they're different, but that shava kesef is going to work even though it's different. And Tila's point asking, wait a second, in order to do that, wouldn't you need a makor, right? Wouldn't you need some sort of pasuk to come and tell you that that's true? And I think, yes, I think absolutely, right? Because once we're saying they're two different things, I can say misvara, kesef and shava kesef are the same because they're both value. I could say, shava kesef can be converted into kesef, right? Just like, if I go onto Amazon and I want to buy something, so even if I use my Israeli credit card, it just says, currency converter, it's going to cost you X number of shekels. And it just does it automatically, right? So did I convert it? Yes. Was that in any way a barrier to the transaction? No. But in three, right, I'm not saying, can I do a currency conversion? I'm saying, can I buy... I can't go on Amazon and buy with seashells, right? So if I can go to the falafel guy down the street and buy with seashells, right? Or with fancy rocks, right? Or with pita, they say, I'll give you 20 pitas and you give me, you know, a bunch of falafel balls, right? But with pita as like a currency, as we go back to seashells, right? I would need a source for that. I would need to prove that. Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that's a very, very good point. And I think it's actually going to tie in very nicely to Tosos, right? Because, right, if why do we need a makor? So, you know, if a source is necessary, right, that's probably telling us that Shava Kesef is not just Kesef, right? Or unless we have like a one-off, which would say, oh, yeah, Shava Kesef can be converted. And then once you have that, you can say, ah, Mikano Lahaba, right? We know that it's convertible. If we think that they're different and we think Shava Kesef as its own entity can work in all these cases, we would need, you know, we'd really need a source for that. So Tosfos, Tosfos said, Minalan to Shava Kesef ke Kesef, right? Where do we get that? And we learned out that Miran and Shava Kasef Kasef, Mio prepare a comma de Shvuo stars called Pradukla. Avagabe Erechin, Dixiv Be Kasef, the Hektish Namitanan, Gabe Hamakdish Sadeo Shektish Niftebekas, Hektish Niftebekasef, the Shava Kasef Minolan, the Shava Kasef Kasef. So Tosos has so far been very consistent at what? That each case needs a separate makor, right? All these things need a makor to tell me Shava Kesef Kekasef, Shava Kesef Kekasef. Now, how do I know that it works here? How do I know that it works there? How do I know that it works here? How do I know that it works there? In all of them, Tosos keeps saying, oh, you know, where's the makor there? Where's the makor there? Right? Gabi Kiddushim Erechim Minalan to Shava Kesef Kekasef. This is, so maybe we can learn out from Eved Evri. If it works by Eved Evri, so maybe it also work out here. Why don't we learn out? Right? You could say that we can use one case as a paradigm for other cases, right? And they say, we see over here by Eved Evri, we see that Shava Kesef is Kekasef. So maybe say, oh, that just proves that across the board, Shava Kesef is Kekasef, right? It'll be a paradigm. But what do we know? If we have two paradigms, then we have no paradigms. Why? What's the logic behind that? Why are two paradigms worse than one? Sometimes. Dila.
I guess it's like if you only have one paradigm, you can assume that you can cross-apply it. But if the second paradigm comes along, it means that when that second paradigm came along, they didn't assume that the first paradigm could be cross-applied. So odds are it only applies to these two cases. Otherwise, they wouldn't need to bring up the second paradigm.
Exactly, right? If it's obvious that Shava Kesef is always Kekesef, right? And I need to tell you that maybe once, but I don't need to tell you that ever again. So then I don't need to tell you that again. If I need to tell it to you twice and I don't tell you every time, right, then I'm clearly saying, oh, in these two cases it works, in other cases, and you know, everywhere else it doesn't. Right? So it would be shtei ksuvim. So on the other hand, having two paradigms is kind of good, right? So when is it good and when is it bad? So it's good if there's a reason why you would need it in both cases, so then we could like treat it as a paradigm, right? If there's no reason why we have to say it in the second one, except because it's not a paradigm, it's not always true, so then we're in trouble. But if Yishlomar Travaihu Tzrichi, if you actually have a reason why you need to tell me explicitly in both cases, we can go back to saying that it's a paradigm. The ikas of Eved Grida lo Matzi leMelef Nizikin Mine Lefisha Matzinu Shehik Beit Hakas of LeInyan Meitav. As well, we wouldn't have learned out Nizikin from Eved Evri. Because by Nizikin, there's a special rule that when you pay back, you need to pay back from the best of your assets. Okay, Meitav Sodehu, Meitav Karmo Yishalim. Now, if I have to pay back from the cream of the crop, the best of my assets, it implies that it's not good enough to pay back, right, the value or the money, right, that I owe you. I have to pay you from the best, the most easily you know, circulated money, the most easily sold, you know, parts of my field, the things that, you know, buyers are going to want the most so that you can recoup your losses most easily. This is not really our sugya, but the concept of mitav, my father explains, is the idea that by nizikin, you're not really giving a quid pro quo. When you damage someone's field, you don't need to pay him back the monetary loss that he entailed, right? As like a quid pro quo, almost like you, it's as if you bought it. So now you have to pay for it, right? You break it, you buy it. Right? So when you break someone else's stuff, when you damage someone else's stuff, is it, oh, you break it, you buy it, and now you have to pay for it because you bought it, right? Or are you really trying to do, is you're really trying to restore his damaged product, his damaged object, right? Right? Things of value are in a measure fungible, right? You have a car. Your car is a car, right? But it's also, it's an asset. It's something that you have that's worth money. And you could buy a new car, right? You could switch out your car for a new car or a better car, right? If I damage your car, am I obligated to pay for having mitigated your assets? Or am I obligated to pay to fix your car, right? So the answer is, I'm really obligated to pay to fix your car, which means it's not good enough to just pay the amount of money that the value of your car has gone down, right? What I really need to do is bring it to the car garage and pay for it to be fixed. And it's possible that fixing your car will cost more than, you know, than adjusting for the lost value of your car, right? If you have like an old car and we get into a fender bender, sometimes, you know, a car with a dent, an old car with a dent, you know, it doesn't lose so much of its value because it's an old car. So like, you know, it has a dent, big deal, right? But sometimes getting out that dent costs a lot of money because like the car, the body shop is like, oh, you know, got to take apart the whole car in order to get at this dent, right? But your real obligation is to fix the dent, right? You're really trying to restore his damaged object. Now, sometimes you can't do that. So what you have to do is just pay him the value of his car. But you have to pay him in a way which makes it easiest for him to actually regain or restore his loss, his now damaged object. So you have to give him, you know, the best or the most easily sold or most easily used and converted compensation so that he can restore whatever asset it is most easily and most effectively. Okay. But the din of mitav is not a din in, oh, the question of is it kesef or not, right? Natsin shekbir akasav alin in mitav. So I would have thought that not only, right, do we require you to pay in mitav karmo, the best part of your field, if you're paying in real estate, but if you're paying in cash, you have to pay cash. You can't just pay a commodity, right? And that makes a lot of sense because what's the amazing thing about cash? Right, it's easily converted into anything. You go onto Amazon, right, and you give your cash, and you get basically whatever object it is that you want. If I give you a really, really, if I give you a hunk of gold, right, if you want to convert that hunk of gold into like a brand new laptop, right, you got to go and sell it to somebody, and then you can use that money and then go on Amazon and buy a new laptop, right? So in terms of like the fungibility of money, right, coinage is the most fungible. So I might have thought that dafka by nizikin, I really want kesef dafka v'lo shovya. L'hochi yitzrich kesef yashiv gabe nizikin. L'gabe eved ivri yitzrich namikra. D'lo matzi yalef min nizikin, d'hava amina eved dumya din nizikin, v'im mikni b'karka libayi meitav. L'kach yitzrich tshavayi. Okay, and I would have thought, oh, you know, eved ivri, if he's being poda himself, using karka, he would have to give meitav. So can't do that. Okay, inami yesh lomar ikas of be'eved hava mina didinhu shenekal alav diyachol liftos atzma afilu b'shava kesef kelo shel yul yitma ben over the kochav. Aval gabi nizikin delo shayich mimakach lo aminan hachi. Maybe dafka by eved ivri, we'd make it easy for him because we don't want him to be an eved. We don't want him to, like, you know, be living with the servants and, you know, and hanging out with all the but the geisha help. We want it to be to be good over Hashem and go on a shul three times a day and responsible for his own avodas Hashem. And being an eved is not necessarily very conducive to that, right? So we might have thought, lower the standard. Maybe kesef isn't. Maybe shava kesef is not really kesef. But in order to make things easier, we let you an eved ivri be poda himself even with shava kesef. Right? What's the logic there? Shava kesef is not really kesef, but maybe we would allow him to use shava kesef as a way to ensure that, let's say, his owner is not losing out, right? He has to compensate his owner somehow so that to prevent his owner from suffering a loss, right? But we want him to get out of Avdos as fast as possible. And therefore, we'd let him use Shava Kasef. But Shava Kasef isn't really Kasef, okay? Aval Gabi Nezikin, Delo Shaykh Le'emar Kach, Lo, Omri Nachi. V'i Kasef Nezikin Greida, Lo Matzu L'Melef Eved Mine. So Chodai Tach Lo Yesh Shava Kasef Ki Kasef Be'Eved, or maybe we'd say, the Eved, it's his own fault that he got sold, because he, right, it's his own fault, because either he got poor because, he did some chatayim, like he used Peros Shvias improperly, or he stole, and then he got sold to pay back for his theft. So since it's his own fault, we wouldn't lower the bar and make it easier for him, right? And those also we needed to say Shava Kesef Kikesef, because actually we also needed to limit those to say that you can't use Karka to do Pidyon HaBen, right? Or Pidyon Kakdish. Okay? What comes out of Tosfos? What's really the... What's the vibe? I wrote that.
It's hard to find a makor for a Shava Kesef.
Well, this is what you would find. It's actually, I would say, no. Yes, because the point is right. No, because in practice, I would actually say the opposite, right? Tosfos succeeds in finding one, two, three, a whole bunch of makaros for Shava Kesef, right? But because, and this is exactly what Rachel is saying, is because each one is very much, singular to its context, right? In each case, basically, Tosfos wants a separate makor for Shava Kesef Kikesef, and Tosfos is very willing, is very convinced, that you could have said, Eved Ivri can't be poed himself with Shava Kesef. Why? Because he was a bad boy, right? He got sold to be an Eved because he did something bad. So therefore, we're not gonna make it easy for him and let him be poed himself with Shava Kesef, right? Or maybe we'll let people use Shava Kesef, not because Shava Kesef Kesef, but because we want to make it easy for him, right? Or maybe we don't want to do it because we want to make it, better for the Nizak, for the damagee, right? So even when we're saying that Shava Kesef Kesef, right, how far are we going? Right? I would say, I think, for Tosfos at least, the argument of Shava Kesef Kikesef is mostly that Shava Kesef is not the same as Kesef. Right? Those are two different things. Kesef is Kesef. Shava Kesef is Shava Kesef. Right? Kesef is coinage. Shava Kesef is value. And, value and coinage are both great. And in general, they both work in the same cases. But I need to show you that. I need to prove you that. And I need a makor for that. And even when I'm telling you that I have makoros for that, I would have thought that maybe, we'll let you get away with value in certain cases to be nice. Or we'd enforce you to use kesef in other cases, to be harsh. But essentially, right, the gisha is that they're different things, right? Because you need a mako for every single one, A, right? As Tehila was pointing out. And B is even when we're talking about, you know, how to differentiate between different cases, why would I need a makor for each one? Right? The argument of Eved hava mina din hu shenikal alav diyachol liftos atzmo b'shoyav kesef kidosh shlo yitma bein ovdei kochavim is not a reason to say that Shabbat Kesef is fundamentally like Kesef, right? Or is, you know, roughly equivalent to Kesef. It's an argument that Shabbat Kesef is distinct from Kesef, and I would think, and is more mekil, right? It's more, it's, you know, it's gives you more leeway. It's a different thing that gives you more leeway, and, you know, it might be nice to let you use it, but it's not the same. Yeah, deal.
I'm just curious, what's the significance of the section talking about Hekdesh and how you can't use Karka?
And like, you know, it's more a din by, you know, by Hekdesh and stuff.
But is that,
yeah, it is significant.
Or the idea of Shabbat Kesef not working in general? Like, I think that seems to contradict the idea that now that we have a Leman, Shabbat Kesef might actually work.
One more time?
Like, if I'm not mistaken, that by the end of Tosfot, you get the idea that because we have a limud, Shabbat Kesef kind of works.
Yeah. So once we have a limud, we have a bunch of limudim, right? And now we can say, oh, you know, paradigmatically, Shabbat Kesef does in fact work like Kesef.
And Hekdesh is an exception as opposed to a challenge to that rule.
So then at the end, he has a challenge. He says, wait a second, but Gabi, the ha, right? The ha de itzrech kra le pidyon haben the hekdesh, the shavu kesef kekesef. Another question. Wait a second, right? After I just said that maybe we can make a binyan av and say that, you know, kiddushin and erichin are learnt out from Eved Ivri and Ezekin. So maybe I can say, okay, well now, like lemaisa, now that I've knocked out all the objections, we should be able to use either one. Right, so then why do I need a makor by Hekdesh and Pidyon Haben? Right, Dishavik Kesef Kesef. The lo nailif me Nizik and Eved Ivri. Why don't we just learn them out from Nizik and Eved Ivri? I just said maybe we could be learning it out. So the answer is in a chanami, you know, you probably really could, but lefisha balim ma'id karkaos v'shtaros she'in poden behen b'chor adam behekdeshos. Right. Well, I needed also to learn out those separately. Primarily because I needed to also learn that you can't use karka and shtaros. So I do have a limud for those ones separately, but it's because I also need to be memai and say you could use Shabbat Kesef, but you can't use karka or shtar.
So is karka not considered to be Shabbat Kesef?
Oh, very good. So karka is sometimes considered to be Shabbat Kesef. In general, it is. By Hekdesh and by Pidyon Hekdesh, by Pidyon Haben, we're going to see the Ran brings up maybe also not by Kiddushin. It's not, right? So why be Mechalik? Right? And it's a great question. Why be Mechalik between Karka and other things? It's a very, very good question. And the possibility, How seriously do you take it? Is that like a special din by Pidyon Haben and Hekdesh? Because by Pidyon Haben and Hekdesh, you really are supposed to be, you're being podeh, so you're like transferring the Kedusha from one thing to the other, and therefore it needs to be some like an object that you can like give over, so you can't, you know, be podeh your son onto a piece of karka because you can't hold the karka, right? Karka is just too, you know, is too independent, basically, for you to really be podeh with. Is that the problem? Or is it, what else could be, that's one option, right? But that would limit it very much. That would say, oh, it's Safka, you know, Pidyon Bechor, Pidyon Kekdesh, because you're trying to move the Kedusha, and you can't move the Kedusha, you can move the Kedusha from one object to the other, you can't move it from, like, the object to, like, a piece of land, right? But what else? But what other option? Let's say you wanted to expand this problem and say, oh, you also maybe also you can't do Kiddushin with Shavu Kesef of Karka, right? That would imply that the Shavu Kesef of Karka is different than other Shavu Kesefs. And why would that be? if we're just talking about value or the potential for value, so at first glance, I would, you know, you would want to say that it shouldn't matter, right? If we're talking about commodity currency, right, that this lump of gold is really worth a certain amount of money, then a lump of land is never really worth X amount of money, right? A pretty rock. A lump of land is always a pretty rock, right? Or it's a supreme pretty rock. Why? Because its value is both, you know, infinite and also entirely conceptual. Because an object, you own the object, you have the object, you can do stuff with the object, you can replace this object with another object, right? Land, what you're really getting is the ability to use the land, right? You can own the land, but on the other hand, the land is just the land. It's, you know, Hashem Aratzim Loa, Teva V'Yoshveva, right? You know, you can... Well,
couldn't you say you can, land as, is always worth its future ability to produce?
What? Its ability to produce what? Of land. Land's value is its ability to produce, right?
So isn't that a set value in a way, as in...
No, it's an unset value. It's like an infinite value.
But I think what... But I think you're... It's like sort of like paying for a... Like paying for like a machine that makes shoes. In theory, the value of the machine is infinite because you can make shoes and make a lot of money off of it. But what you're paying for is the fact that this machine can make shoes.
I know, but what you're really paying for is the machine. Can you pay with the right to use the machine? Right? Karka is fascinating because on the one hand, it's real estate. It's the only real value that there is, right? Because now you have karka. On the other hand, you don't really have the karka. You have the ability to do stuff on the karka, right? Now, you know, to quote Pocahontas, right, you can own the earth, but still all you'll own is earth until you can paint with all the colors of the wind. And the question is, you know, can you say, oh, you know, I'll teach you how to paint with all the colors of the wind, you know, in return for X amount of money, right? Is giving someone the ability to paint with all the colors of the wind, you know, a commodity, right? No, painting with all the colors of the wind is not a commodity, right? It's both way, way, way more valuable, right? But it's also way more ephemeral. It's way more, you know, ethereal than an actual hunk of gold, which is exactly the point of Pocahontas, right? They come looking for hunks of gold, right? And right in front of them is, you know, is the earth and the ability to paint with all the colors of the wind, right? But unfortunately, the white man just really wants the hunk of gold, right? And the reason why, I think, is because, right, because you can take the hunk of gold, bring it back to England, and, you know, and King Jimmy will build him a shrine or something. So I think that's a fascinating question, because on the one hand, Zach's like, wait a second, I could take this land, I could sell it, I could do stuff with it, that's got value, and it does. But the value of land is like less inherent, right? Because, for example, if you were part of the Virginia Company, then digging the land's value isn't really the land, it's the ability to dig it and hope that maybe you'll find gold and get a shrine out of it. And what's the value of getting a shrine, right? Is getting a shrine like, you know, worth X amount of money, or no, it's like you have a shrine, right? Like where do you put your finger on the value? And it's significant.
At the same time, like I could purchase a piece of gold today for, you know, for however much it's worth, and tomorrow the price of gold could plummet. So
right,
how's that different?
Because the price of gold, but you still have the gold, and the gold still has value. Its value vis-a-vis other things might go down, right? But it's still an object with value.
You factor in risk into this consideration of like Shava Kesef, or especially the role of land.
Let's say you bought a piece of land in Manhattan.
As a risk.
Right? And then the local municipality said, ah, yes, that land. By the way, you should know, that land is a historical site and is actually slated to be a park. So that piece of land is actually not land that you're allowed to use anymore. We've changed the zoning to be, you know, it's zoning level zero. You're not allowed to build even a zero-story structure on it. And, you know, it's actually going to be a protest encampment, right? So your karka is you don't have anything anymore, right? I can say, oh, your rock is less valuable, but here you don't even have the rock because you can't use the rock. And I'm just saying, karka is just both real estate. It's supposed to be way better than any other asset. It's also way worse, right? Because its value is so much high. A, you don't really have it necessarily as an object, right? If I'm trying to convert or treat a commodity as currency because it's an object that has value, karka is not an object that I can transfer. I'm not giving you the object, right? I'm giving you ownership. I'm giving you the rights. I'm giving you the potential. I'm not giving you the object. So you can't really treat karka as if it was a stand-in for currency so much, right? On the other hand, it definitely has value, and I'm definitely giving you value, right? On the other hand, if I'm really thinking of like kesef and shaveh kesef, I don't even know if I would say, oh, karka is shaveh kesef, right? I mean, if I'm talking about, oh, really, it's all about value, so then if I'm talking about the conversion possibility, so then, you know, I'm not so sure about that because it's not really a commodity that I can say, oh, this commodity is now a currency commodity, right? This hunk of gold is now a currency, right? Why? Because it's gold. It's a commodity with value, right? If it's karka, I can't really do that so much. If it's shaveh kesef works the same way kesef does, so then maybe, okay, it has value. So it has value, right? If I'm trying to say that, oh, shaveh kesef and kesef are essentially the same because they both have value. So then my question becomes, what value do I want, right? If I'm saying that the value that I'm talking about, according to the smat, right, of, oh, you're paying off like the first, you know, dollar of the $1,000 that you owe in. And the dollar, so that could be a dollar or that could be a, you know, a nice rock or an iPhone. When I'm giving you land, right, am I giving you the value? I'm giving you something with value, but I'm really handing over value, right? And if there's no action of handing over value, because you just don't have the ability to hand it over, it's not an object, right? So there's am I maybe paying off my debt in a sense? Yes, there's no actual handing over, right? So maybe that's not good enough. And I think karka, you're right. On the basis, on like the, you know, your default should be, well, karka has value, so it should work. But I think it's not as obvious as you might suggest, think. And I think what's fascinating is, let's say you wanted to go out and say, ah, shaveh kesef, kikesef. And you could use karka as shaveh kesef in almost all cases, except not by kiddushin. What would you say that? Right? That I think that's a fascinating idea. Because then we're saying, you know, that what? That shaveh kesef kikesef is working differently by kinyan and kiddushin. Right? Because shaveh kesef kikesef can get me a kinyan, but it can't get me kiddushin. Or could, but not by karka. Okay? Just bear that on the back burner. Because I think that's very, it's going to come up. And we're gonna look into that, right? So just, you know, even once we say that shaveh kesef is kikesef, not all shaveh kesefs might be created equal. Okay, so Tosfos, just recapping Tosfos is very clearly of the opinion, right, that shaveh kesef and kesef are distinct. You need multiple sources to prove that to us, and even for seemingly subjective, you know, reason such as, you know, we want to encourage this, we don't want to encourage this, we'd have serious havaminas to differentiate between whether or not shaveh kesef kikesef or not. Okay. The Tosfos Rush is very similar, but he limits, you know, in a significant way.
Yeshomar,
Okay? And it's important because, like Tosfos, the Tosfos Rosh says, oh, we learn out from Eved Ivri, what's important here is that what? He says, you learn out just from Eved Ivri. You only need Eved Ivri. You don't need two Psakim. Right? And it's not like Eved Ivri plus Nezikin. Eved Ivri is the paradigm. It taught us that Shavu Kasef is Kikasef. And when it comes to Pidyon HaBen, and there's a klal prad klal, it's lo l'rabo shavu kesef, el l'mai karkol sushtaros. It's only coming to limit karka and shtar. It's not coming to teach us shavu kesef at all. Not even as a side point. Right? In Tosvos, by Pidyon HaBen, he said, we did also get taught shavu kesef kikesef, right? Because, right, l'fisha ba l'mai karkol sushtaros. So once you're my karka and shtar, you needed to tell me shavu kesef still. Tosfos Rosh doesn't think so. He says, oh, no, it's only about lo l'rabo shavu kesef, elo l'mai karka v'shtar, o she'im podim. Okay, what about nezikin? How do we bailan gabi nezikin yashav rabo shavu kesef kesef? Hainu taima l'fisha metzin, o she'ik v'rakasav l'inin meitav, so kodai t'chamina nami de kesef davka. Right? And Eved Ivri also, lo matzi yalef min nezikin, the havamina, Kimakni bekarka liba imid. Right? Because then I thought that you have to really compare it to Eved Ivri. What's the difference between Tosfos Rosh and Tosfos? Tosfos, right, did it in both. One, thought even really in all these cases, you need a makor. Tosfos Rosh said, you need a makor, you only need it once. That's number one. Number two is when he's discussing the Eved Ivri and Ezekiel. He never says, oh, maybe, you know, we would let you use Shavu Kesef Kikasef in order to make things easier. Right? He doesn't say that. Why wouldn't he say that? Why doesn't he say that?
Because he doesn't see it as an exception. He sees it as a paradigm. So he wouldn't, you know, minimize it in a way.
Okay, I just like sharpen that a little bit. He hasn't used Shavu Kesef Kikasef.
Well, if he's going to say that every time we learn Shavu Kesef, we learn it from Eved Ivri can't be a unique case. It has to be a paradigm. So there can't be some special factor about it that makes us only want to apply it there.
Okay, true. But I'm saying then we could also say, oh, we wouldn't learn it from them then. Okay, he just never suggests that you would need, that you would have like an exception there. In terms of, oh, we'll be more mekil and we'll allow you. He said, we might not let you use Shavu Kesef. You could have thought that we wouldn't let you use Shavu Kesef. But he never says, oh, you could have thought that dafka there, we'd let you use Shavu Kesef. Right? He only says, oh, you need to teach me that, you know, we might have thought that we're not going to let you use Shavu Kesef in this case. But we never have a havamina that we would allow you to use Shavu Kesef in order to make things easier. So I think the difference between the Tosfos Rosh and Tosfos is that Tosfos very much sees Shavu Kesef Kikasef as a chiddush, right? There are really distinct things. If I teach you one, I teach you the other, right? So I could think, oh, I'll let you use Shavu Kesef in this case, and I won't let you use it in these other cases, right? Sometimes I dafka want Kesef, sometimes I'm also happy with Shavu Kesef, or I dafka would want to let you use Shavu Kesef. But what Tosfos is doing is Tosfos keeps using them as separate things, right? So I can say, oh, I'll let you use Shavu Kesef here, you know, because I have one reason to do it. And I can say, oh, Dafka will make you use Kesef here because I have another reason. The Tosfos Rosh says, once we have this makor, that Shavu Kesef Kikasef, so Shavu Kesef is Kikasef. That's a rule, right? That means that Shavu Kesef is either convertible into Kesef or it's equivalent to Kesef, right? But once that's true, you can't limit Shavu Kesef, right? Once you have that makor, you need a makor to tell me that it's true. But once it's true, you don't need any more makoros. And you would never come and tell me, oh, you know, Shavu Kesef isn't going to be true in this case or that case. you know, or casting your Dafna and you cast up. Your Dafna going to let me use Shava Kassav here because of some special reason. You don't need a special reason to use Shava Kassav. Kassav, that's a default, right? When might we limit Shava Kassav Kassav? So in Nezikin, we might limit Shava Kassav Kassav, not because, oh, Shava Kassav is distinct from Kassav and therefore it might not be included in Kassav. It is included in Kassav. It's obviously included in Kassav, but because of Meitav, what's Meitav? Meitav says not just that you need to use Kassav, Meitav says you need to use the best Kassav. So I would think that if I needed to use the best Kassav when I'm, or the best payment option when I'm paying with Karka, maybe I can also make you pay the best payment option when I'm playing with cash, money. I should have to pay you in cash, right? I can't give you a check. I can't give you commodities. I need to give you cash. Kamash Malan, you don't need to pay in cash. Right? But that would be a reason to limit Shava Kassav Kikassav. Sorry, that wouldn't be a reason to limit Shava Kassav Kikassav. Shava Kassav is still Kikassav. That would be a reason why we would require the use of a better form of Kassav. Right? But according to this Rush, once we have a Makor, the Shava Kassav Kikassav, Shava Kassav is Kassav, or it works like Kassav. It works the same way. It accomplishes the same thing. Right? So you have one Makor, you don't need three, and you never would ever say that Shava Kassav and Kassav are distinct fundamentally. What you would say is only that Shava Kassav is Kassav, but nonetheless, I might need not just Kassav, but Meitav Kassav. And is Shava Kassav Meitav Kassav? Is that the type of Kassav that you can pay back Nezikin? Because Nezikin, you're really trying to restore his object and not just compensate him for it. Okay? So Tosos always says, oh, every halacha needs a makor. Right, and Tosfos Rashi says you need one makor, but once you have that makor, you know it's Shava Kassav is not Shava Kassav, right? Because Tosfos is really treating them as two separate things, and Tosfos Rashi says you need a makor to say that they're the same. But once they're the same, that's perfect. That's great. Okay, do we have time? We don't really have time. Okay, fine. Next time we'll pick up with the Ramban. But the Ramban goes in a different direction. It says, no, right? Really, really, it's all intuitive, right? Really, Misvara, you know, we see the Ramban inside, but really, Misvara, really intuitively, we can understand that Shava Kassav should be Kakassav. We don't need a Makor. Okay? And that's what we're going to discuss next.